We're continuing in Rabbi Nachman's stories, and we'll begin the second story of Sippurim Isaias. This story is unique pretty much among all the 13 stories in that it has the least explanation, the least commentary. It's considered to be, in some ways, very deep, and we get an inkling. The commentaries give us a very, very bare inkling about what it's speaking about. But as far as interpreting each one of the details in the story, that there is just about no commentary available that I know of to date. This story was told by Rabbi Nachman, and Rab Nosson Zal, his main student, his main disciple, right before he passed away, he had one of his students read to him the first story that we covered just recently, and this story. And when we get to the end of the story, we'll note the connection to the fact that he was about to pass away. This story is called Maise Mimelech VeKesar, the story of a king and the emperor. And it begins that once there was an emperor who didn't have any children, and there was also a king who didn't have any children. The emperor traveled all over the world trying to find a cure in order for him to be able to have children, and the king also traveled for the same reason. And both of them happened to come to the same inn. They didn't know anything at all about each other, and yet the emperor recognized in the manner that the king was conducting himself that he was obviously a person of royalty. In other words, they were both disguised. It wasn't obvious to people that this one was an emperor or this one was a king, and yet the emperor was able to detect in the king that he was a person of royalty. When the emperor inquired, the other person admitted that he is a king. The king also recognized royalty in the emperor, and sure enough, the emperor admitted who he was, what his position was. And the two of them revealed to each other that they were traveling in order to find a solution to their problem of being able to have children. They made an agreement between them that when they returned to their wives, if one of them would have a boy and the other one would have a girl, that they would make a shidduch between them. They would have them marry each other. The emperor returned to his home, and sure enough, his wife gave birth to a girl, to a daughter. The king returned to his home, and his wife had a baby boy. However, the agreement that they had made between them was forgotten. The emperor sent his daughter to study, and the king also sent his son to go study. And sure enough, both of these two children ended up by the same teacher. They liked each other very, very much. And they made a bond between them, an agreement between them, that they would marry each other. The king's son actually took a ring and placed it on her hand and married her. Then the emperor sent for his daughter and brought her back home, and the king also sent for his son and brought him back home. Obviously, the king and the emperor are not aware, or we don't see them being aware at this point, that their children have married. People tried proposing matches for the emperor's daughter, and she refused everybody because of this agreement that she had made. The king's son, on the other hand, missed her very, very much, and the emperor's daughter was also very sad that she was without her husband. Without her fiancé, without her husband, to the point where he became ill. And when people would ask him, what's causing your illness? What are you so sad about, so pained about? He refused to say. So people said to his servant, maybe you could investigate, maybe you could ask him and find out what's troubling him, what's brought on this sickness. And sure enough, the servant said, I know exactly what it is. Because this servant had been with him at that time when he was in school, when he was by that teacher, and he revealed to the people exactly what had happened. That sure enough, this young man had met this young woman, and they took a tremendous liking to each other, and now they've been separated. And then the king reminded himself that he had already made an agreement with that emperor to have that if they would both have children, a son and a daughter, they would marry. So the king went ahead and wrote a letter to the emperor, reminding him of this pact and suggesting that he prepare himself for the wedding, because this had all been agreed upon earlier. He didn't ask him any question. He just suggested that he prepare for the wedding, because they had already agreed upon this from before. The emperor now, at this point in time, did not want to go ahead with this. For whatever reasons, Rabbein Ezhal doesn't mention what the reasons are, but at this point in time, he didn't want to go ahead and have his daughter marry the king's son, and yet he didn't have the audacity to refuse, you know, because this was an agreement that he had made. So he went ahead and sent a message to the king that the king should send his son to the emperor in order for the emperor to see if he's qualified to govern, to rule, to lead. And if he is, if he shows himself to be worthy, then the emperor said, I'll have him marry my daughter. The king went ahead and sent his son to the emperor. The emperor put this young man in a room, and he gave him all kinds of papers that are involved in leading countries to see if he was capable, if he was capable of understanding these documents and knowing exactly how to deal with them. This son of the king, however, yearned tremendously to see his bride, to see the daughter of the prince, the daughter of the emperor, and he couldn't see her at all. They didn't allow him to see her. One time he was standing near a wall, a mirrored wall, and looking in the mirror, he saw her, and he fainted. She came over to him, and she woke him up, and she told him that she's being offered all kinds of matches, and she's refusing all of them because of the bond, the agreement that they had made between them. So he said to her, what can we do? Your father seems to be refusing to allow us to live as husband and wife. So she said, doesn't matter. I don't accept that. I'm loyal to you 100%. Then they discussed it, and they concluded that they're going to run away at sea together. They rented a ship, a boat, and they set out to sea. And now they're going out on the open sea. At one point, they decided to approach an area where they saw the shoreline. So sure enough, they came there, and they saw a forest. So they went into the forest, and the daughter of the emperor took the ring that the son of the king had given to her, and she gave it to him, she returned it to him, and then she lay down to rest. When the son of the king saw that she's about to get up, he saw that she was about to wake up, he took the ring and put it back next to her. Then they got up, they left this island, and they went to the ship, they went to the boat. Then they reminded themselves that they had forgotten this ring over there on shore. So she sent him, the daughter of the emperor sent the son of the king back to shore to go retrieve the ring. He went back there, and he couldn't find the place where they had been. So he started searching, he went to a different place, couldn't find the ring. And he went searching from place to place until he got lost and couldn't find his way back to the shore. Then she decided to go look for him, and she also got lost. So he was wandering around searching, and finally he saw a path which led him to an inhabited place, a place where people lived. Now, being that he was the son of a king, he wasn't trained as a craftsman or anything. He didn't have any way to market himself in terms of what he could do to support himself, to work. So he became a servant. She also was wandering, searching, trying to find him, couldn't find him, until she resolved to herself that she's going to stay by the shore. She's going to stay there near the water. She's not going to wander around on this island. So she stayed there near the water, at the edge of the island, and there were fruit-bearing trees, and that was where she decided to stay. During the daytime, she would walk around near the water, thinking maybe she'll see some passers-bys, maybe she'll come across some people, and she sustained herself from the fruit that were on the trees there. At night, she would go up on a tree in order to be protected from any wild animals. This is the first section of the story. Now Rabbein Azal continues. One day, there was a tremendously wealthy merchant who did business all over the world, and he had an only son. This businessman was getting older, and one day his son said to him, "Being that I see that you're old right now, and I'm young, and the people that are close to you are not concerned about me in any way, and you're going to pass away and I'll be left with nothing. I'll be left not knowing how to manage on my own because I haven't been trained in doing business. So I won't know how to do it. Therefore, I'd like to ask that you give me a ship with merchandise so that I can go out to sea and I could learn the ways of doing business." Sure enough, his father did this. He gave him a ship loaded with merchandise, and his son went out to different countries, and he bought other merchandise, and he was being successful. While he was out at sea, he noticed trees. He noticed the shoreline where there were these trees, where the daughter of the emperor was. So he thought it looked to him like a place of civilization, like an inhabited island. So he wanted to go there, he wanted to approach it. As he started getting close, he saw that it's just trees, just a bunch of trees, you know, on the border of an island, but that it's not really an inhabited island. So he thought, forget it, he doesn't need it, maybe he'll just go back into the sea. And then he looked out, and he saw a tree, and he saw a person up in the tree. So he thought, who knows, maybe he's imagining it. So he mentioned this to the other people that were with him, and they also looked, and they also said, it looks like there's a person up in the tree there. So they decided to approach. They sent a person with a small boat there, and they were watching out, guiding and directing this boat to let them know exactly how to go towards that tree on the island. Sure enough, the one that was there went and saw that there was a person up in the tree and reported back. And then the son of this businessman went to see for himself. And sure enough, he saw this woman, the daughter of the emperor, sitting up in the tree. So he asked her to come down, and she said to him she refuses to come with him into his ship unless he promises her that he won't touch her until he returns with her back to his home country and he'll marry her in a respectable way. This he did. He gave his word, and she agreed to return with him to go with him onto his ship. The son of this businessman saw that she was tremendously talented. She was able to play musical instruments beautifully, and she was able to speak many different languages, and he was overjoyed at the fact that he had met such a woman. Eventually, when he started getting close to his home country, she said to him that it's only proper that you go to your house and report to your father and your relatives and your friends that all of them should come out to welcome me. In other words, with the proper, to receive me with the proper dignity and respect because of the fact that you're bringing such an honorable woman. And then they'll get to know exactly who I am. Because she had also made him agree with her that he would not ask her who she is until after they marry. Then she said, I'll reveal to you exactly who I am. And he had agreed. So sure enough, he agreed to this also. Now she mentioned an additional point. It's only proper, the fact that you're bringing such a special woman back home, whom you're intending to marry now, that you let the sailors who have returned, you know, have gone this long trip, that you let them celebrate also, join in the celebration by giving them drink. How do these guys celebrate? Getting drunk. So that they'll also know exactly who you're marrying, what kind of woman you're marrying, such an important woman. And sure enough, he agreed with her. He said, okay, fine. So he took very, very special wine that he had on the ship, and he gave it to the sailors, who got very drunk. And he went to his house to inform his father and his relatives of this great news that he had returned from his trip, and that he was bringing with him this a very special woman. The sailors had gotten very drunk and had gone off the ship. And they fell down and fell asleep in their drunkenness. Now, while the family of this young man was getting ready to go out to the ship to meet her, she went ahead and untied the ship from where it was tied up when it was brought into the shore. She spread the sails and took off with the ship. Now they're all coming out to meet her where the son said he had parked the ship, and sure enough, nothing there. Nobody there, no ship, no woman, no nothing, no merchandise. And his father, the father of this son who had given him the ship loaded with all the merchandise, got very, very angry. And his son is screaming and saying, no, believe me, I brought a ship with merchandise, I made a lot, I was very successful. And they see nothing. So he said, what do you mean? Ask the sailors. So sure enough, they go ask the sailors. And they see that they're lying there drunk. Finally, the sailors woke up and they asked them, and they don't know, they don't remember anything. They only know that they returned with a ship loaded with merchandise, but they have no idea where it is. So now the father of this young man, who had given his son the merchandise and everything, got very angry at his son, and he threw him out. And he said to him, I don't want to see you anymore. And sure enough, the son was exiled and left wandering. And she, the daughter of this emperor, is now out to sea with his boat without the sailors. This is the first of four episodes that she's going to have now during her travels. One day, Rabbeinu Zal tells, there was a king who was building a palace by the sea. He wanted specifically to build a palace next to the sea because he enjoyed that air, and he enjoyed the fact that the ships are close by. And this woman, the daughter of the emperor, is traveling in this ship out at sea, and her ship starts approaching close to the palace that this king had built for himself along the seashore. The king looked out, and he sees a ship without any captain, without anybody running it. There are no people on it, just about. It seems totally empty. Then he thought maybe he's imagining this. So he asked the people that were there to take a look also, and sure enough, they said also, it looks to them like there's nobody on the ship. And she's approaching close to this palace. Then she thought it over and said, what do I need this palace for? What do I need to come here for? And she decided she's going to pull away. So she started trying to move the ship away from the palace. But by this time, the king sent for her, and he brought the ship in, and he brought her to his house. This king was not married. He didn't have a wife, because he couldn't choose a woman for himself. Those whom he wanted didn't want, they didn't want, and those who wanted him, he didn't want them at all. Now, when this daughter of the emperor arrived, she said to him that she insists that he swear that he will not touch her until he marries her in a legal, respectable way. He agreed and he swore. And she said to him, it's also only proper that you'd leave the ship alone. Don't open it up, don't check the merchandise yet, but rather leave it there the way it is until we get married. And then, after the wedding, you'll be able to see the wonderful merchandise that I've brought, so that people won't say that you just took a woman from the market. They'll see what kind of woman you've succeeded in marrying. So he promised her that he would comply with it. This king wrote to all the different countries and cities that all the dignitaries should gather and come to his wedding. And he built a special palace for her. And she requested that he bring her 11 princesses to stay with her. So sure enough, the king gave instructions for them to do that. And they sent her 11 princesses, 11 daughters of dignitaries. And they built for each one of them their own private palace. And she had her private palace. And they would gather to her, they would come to her, they would play music together and sing together. One time, she said to these 11 maidens that are with her, that she wants to go out with them to sea. So they agree. They went with her. And they were carrying on, enjoying. And she said to them that she'd like to honor them with some wonderful wine that she has. So she gave them from the wine that was in the boat, in the ship. They got drunk. These 11 maidens got drunk. And they fell asleep. She went ahead and untied the ship, spread the sails, and ran away. Ran away with the ship, with these 11 maidens. Now the king and his people are looking, and they see that the ship's not there, and they got horrified. And the king said, be careful, no one should tell her about this. He didn't realize that she was on the ship. He just went and looked where the ship was parked, and he sees it's not there, and he figures, who knows, some kind of accident happened, or somebody stole the ship, and it's gone. So he told his people, be careful, no one should tell her about this, because her anguish will be so great over the fact that she lost this ship with who knows what kind of expensive merchandise that was on it. And also, he said, who knows, maybe she'll think that the king took the ship and gave it to someone. So he said, rather, let's send one of those young women to tell her in a very delicate way, in an intelligent way, you know, about what happened. So sure enough, they went to one of the palaces where these women were supposed to be, these maidens. Nobody there. They went to the second one. Nobody there. And this was in each one of the 11 palaces where these young women were supposed to be, empty, deserted. So they decided to wait till evening, and at night they'll send an elderly maiden to tell her, to tell this woman what happened. They went to her room, And sure enough, nobody there. And now they got very, very confused, very didn't know what to do. Now the fathers of these princesses, these 11, who used to get letters from their daughters all the time, now they see suddenly days are going by and they're not receiving any communication from them. So they went and traveled to the place where this king is to see what's happening with their daughters. And sure enough, there's no daughters, nobody there. So they became very, very angry, and they decided to exile this king, that this king should be sent away to an island or wherever it is where they send people who are exiled for life, people that are judged for death penalty. Because these people were all ministers of government. They were the leaders of the government. However, they started to think, on the other hand, what did this king do to deserve being exiled like this? Because this wasn't his fault. It wasn't any action on his part. It's not something he did that caused this. So therefore, they simply came to a conclusion that they're going to remove him as king and exile him. They're not going to send him off to any deserted island. They're just going to have him leave the kingdom. And this is what they did. Now, this daughter of the emperor, who escaped with these 11 daughters of these ministers, she's traveling out at sea, and eventually these young women wake up. And she starts playing with them as they were doing before, singing together, everything, because they didn't realize yet that they're miles out at sea. So at one point they said to her, "How about if we go back? How about if we go back to the palace?" She said to them, no, let's wait a little longer. And they stayed a little longer. Then suddenly it got very stormy outside. They saw a storm breaking out at sea. So they said, "How about if we go back to the palace?" So at this point, she revealed to them that we're not anywhere near the palace. We're out at sea. We're miles out at sea. So they asked her, "Why did you do this?" So she said, "Because I was afraid, because when the ship was tied up, I saw it started getting very stormy, and I was afraid that who knows, maybe the ship was crashing against the shore. I was afraid maybe it would break up, so I figured I'm better off untying it and opening the sails. That's why I did it." So now they're riding out at sea, this daughter of the emperor with these 11 women, and they're playing music, they're singing, and they see a palace. So they say to her, "How about if we approach there?" And she didn't want to, because she said she felt bad, she regretted the last time that she had approached, she had seen a palace and she approached it. This was the palace of the king who had wanted to marry her. Then, at one point, they saw what appeared to be like an island. So they started approaching it. And on this island, there were 12 pirates, thieves, murderers, criminals. And these 12 wanted to murder these women. So she, the daughter of the emperor, asked, "Who's the leader among you?" So they pointed to the leader. And she said to him, "What do you people do?" So they said to her, "We're pirates, we're thieves." So she said to him, "I and my women here, we're also thieves. But you guys steal with physical strength. We are thieves, we're intellectual thieves. We're very knowledgeable in languages and music. So therefore, what benefit are you going to have in killing us? You're better off marrying us, and you'll have our wealth also. Besides your own wealth, you'll have our wealth too." And she showed them what she had on this ship, the merchandise that she had on this ship. Sure enough, they agreed. So the thieves showed her also the tremendous wealth that they had. And they took these women to all the places that they had there on the islands. And then they came to an agreement that they're not going to get married all at the same night or the same time, but rather they're going to do it consecutively. One wedding, then the second wedding, and so on and so forth. And also, that each one of them would choose a woman which was most suitable to him, which was matched to him. Each one based on their level, the oldest, the greatest. Now, the daughter of the emperor said to these thieves that she wants to honor them with some extraordinary wine that she has in this ship, which she only uses, she had reserved it, for this special occasion when Hashem would send her match. So she gave them wine in 12 cups, and she said that each one of them should drink. She said to the maidens that each one of them should give one of these 12 thieves to drink. Sure enough, they drank this wine, they got drunk, and they fell down. Now she said to these her maidens that were with her, now let's go slaughter. Each one of us will slaughter her match. So sure enough, they went and murdered these 12 thieves, and they found the tremendous, extraordinary wealth that these thieves had hidden away, which there isn't any king that had the kind of wealth that they possessed. So now she and the women agreed that they're not going to take any copper or silver, only gold and precious stones. Because they realized they're limited in space, and rather than, you know, they wanted to make sure they got the most expensive things, this is what they did. So they threw off the ship things that were less expensive, less valuable, and they loaded up the ship now with the most precious items. Gold, precious stones that they found there. And at this point, she and these women made an agreement that they're not going to go dressed as women anymore, but rather they sewed clothing for themselves as men, to be dressed as men. The way men go dressed in Germany, in other words, not long coats, but short jackets, those kind of garments. And they took off with the ship again. The next episode. One day, there was a king who was very old, and he had an only son, and he married off this son, and he turned over the kingdom to his son while he was living. He put his son in charge of the kingdom. Now the son said to his father that he'd like to go for a trip with his wife out at sea so that she should get used to the air of the sea, because if chas v'shalom a time would come that they have to escape, they have to run away to sea, she should be acclimated to it. So sure enough, he left with his wife and some ministers, and they set out to sea. And they were having a wonderful time on this ship. They were celebrating and rejoicing. Then at one point they said, this prince who had taken over his father's kingdom said to the people that were with him that because they're having such a fabulous time, how about if they all get undressed completely? And the only thing they left upon themselves was undergarment. And at this point, they started having a contest among them to see who can climb up on the mast, the tall mast that was holding the sails of the ship. So this prince who had taken over his father's kingdom, he was the one who tried the hardest to go to the top of this mast. While he's doing this, the daughter of the emperor, with her 11 maidens on her ship, their ship is starting to approach and get close to the ship that this prince is on. And she observes this other ship, and at first she was afraid to come close, and then afterwards they started approaching, and they saw that there's a major celebration going on the ship of this prince. They're celebrating, they're laughing, So she realized that they're not pirates. They're not killers. So she started approaching closer. And at one point, the daughter of the emperor said to her friends, the 11 maidens, I have the ability to knock that bald person who's trying to climb up that mast, to knock him off into the sea. Because this prince was bald. He had no hair on his head. So they said to her, how can you do it? We're still a distance away from that ship. She said to them that she has a certain type of glass which has the ability to burn. And this glass she's going to use to cause this prince to fall into the sea. But she said she's going to wait. She wants to wait till he gets all the way up on top. Because if he's in the middle and he falls, he'll fall into the ship. If she waits till he gets all the way on top, when he falls, he'll fall into the sea. So sure enough, she waited till he got all the way to the top. And she shined this glass. She positioned this glass in such a way towards the sun to reflect the light of the sun and shined it on him towards his head, and whereby she was able to focus the heat of the sun on his head and destroy and cause him to die and fall into the sea. Now, as soon as the people that were on the ship with this prince who was racing up to the top of this mast, when they saw him fall into the sea, there was tremendous commotion and excitement. Because how in the world are they going to return back without this prince? His father will die from anguish that his son died at sea like this. So they decided that they're going to approach this other ship that they see, which was the one with the daughter of the emperor on it. Who knows, maybe there's a doctor on that ship that could advise them what to do. Maybe there's something they could still do here. So they started approaching the ship with the daughter of the emperor and the maidens. And they said to them, don't be afraid, we're not going to do any harm to you at all whatsoever. And they asked these people who, again, these women who are dressed like men now, they asked them, is there maybe a doctor on your ship that could help us, that could advise us? And they told them the whole story about this prince that was riding with them and that he had climbed up this mast and he fell into the sea. So the daughter of the emperor said, pull him up out of the sea. This they did. And she took his pulse and she said, I can tell that his mind has been affected. So sure enough, they operated, they cut open his skull, and they saw that she was right, that the brain had been burnt in a way. And they were shocked. So they asked her, they requested of this daughter of the emperor, who they don't know that she's a woman even, she's a doctor now, as far as they're concerned. They asked if she would accompany them back to their country, and she would be a doctor. They saw that she had an incredible ability to be able to diagnose this prince. They said they wanted her to become the doctor of the king, and she would be very respected and honored, and she refused. She said she's not a doctor. It's just that she has some knowledge. You know, there are certain things that she knows. Now the people that were on this ship with the prince refused to go back to their kingdom. They didn't want to go back without their leader, without the prince. So these two ships started riding together. And at one point, they said to themselves that wouldn't it be a great idea that their queen, which is the wife of this prince that had died, should marry this doctor. because they say, again, they had such respect for this doctor. He's so smart, so knowledgeable. And that this doctor will become the new king. And the elderly king, the father of the one, the prince who had died, him they'll kill. This is what they thought they were going to do. However, they felt that they couldn't speak to this. They couldn't say this to the queen openly. They didn't feel comfortable saying to her that they wanted to suggest that she marry this doctor. Now, the queen herself also thought that this was a great idea. Here, her husband has died out at sea. She's a queen without a king. She thought also that this would be a great idea for her to marry this doctor. However, she was embarrassed and afraid. Who knows, maybe the people won't want to accept him to be the king. So they decided to make a big party. Because they figured at a party, while they're celebrating and drinking, then they'll be able to talk about this. Sometimes there are certain things that you can't say in a regular conversation, but when you're partying and celebrating and everybody's laughing, happy, it's possible to say certain things at that time that you couldn't say under regular circumstances. So sure enough, they made a celebration. They made a party, and every day they would party in honor of another person. When it came to the day of the doctor's party, he gave them from his wine. Again, we're referring to him as a he. This is the daughter of the emperor who's dressed up like a man. Gave them from the wine that he had, and they got drunk. And while they're celebrating and rejoicing, some of the ministers spoke up and said, wouldn't it be a great idea for the queen to marry the doctor? And the doctor said, oh, that would be wonderful if you were saying this when you weren't drunk, if you really meant this. So the queen spoke up also and said, oh, this would be wonderful for me to marry this doctor, but I wonder if the people would accept it. So the doctor responded again, it would be great, it would be wonderful, but if this were being said while people were sober, not drunk. This was his response both times. Then when they came out of their drunkenness, the ministers remembered what they had said, and they were embarrassed for the queen, the fact that they had suggested this. But then on the other hand, they realized that she herself had said the same thing. She, on the other hand, was also embarrassed for them, but she realized that they had also suggested this. So they started discussing this. And sure enough, they all came to an agreement about this. And she, the queen, married the doctor. And they left for their country to return to the country that they had originally come from. This queen and the people that are accompanying her on her ship. When the people in the country saw that they had returned, they all rejoiced. They were very happy because for so long they had been without their new king, without the prince who had been made king. And they didn't know where he was. And the elderly king had already died before they returned. Now, a short while after they came to the country, the people saw that the prince is not there. So they said, where is it? Where is our king? What happened? So they were told the whole story, how he had died, and how the ministers had already accepted upon themselves a new king, and everybody rejoiced over the fact that they had brought back this new king. And the king, who was actually the daughter of the emperor, commanded that they make an announcement in all of their cities and countries that any person, no matter where they are, whether they're a guest or whether they're a resident or a non-resident of the country or someone who ran away or someone who had been exiled, who any of those people can come, are invited to come and attend the wedding. No one should abstain from coming. and everyone will receive beautiful gifts, wonderful gifts at this wedding. And again, the king made an announcement, the king who is this daughter of the emperor, that around all the each one of the cities, they should prepare wells so that if anyone needs to drink, they shouldn't have to go searching for water, but rather there should be wells set up for people to be able to drink. And also, this king instructed that they place a portrait of the king next to each one of these wells, and that they post guards by the wells who should be on the lookout, that if they see anyone coming to the well and looking at the portrait and staring at it in an unusual way, and they see that the person is looking strangely at the portrait, they should capture that person and imprison them. And sure enough, this is what they did. And these three people who she had dealings with before, meaning the original son of the king, who was supposed to be her husband, who had been lost on the island, he showed up. And also the son of the wealthy businessman who had been exiled, whose father had exiled him because of the fact that his bride supposedly ran off with the ship with all the wealth. And the third person being the king who had been exiled because of the fact that she ran away with all the 11 maidens and everything. Each one of these three, when they saw the portrait, they recognized her immediately. They looked and they remembered the episode they had with her, and they were deeply distressed. And they were looking very, very carefully at the picture, and the guards that were there captured them. Now, while the wedding was taking place, the king, who is this daughter of the emperor, gave a command that all those people that have been imprisoned should be brought before him. These three were brought. She recognized them, and they didn't recognize her because now she's dressed as a man. In the portrait, could be it only showed her face. So there they were able to see, they recognized the face without any problem. But here they're coming to this wedding, they're being brought to this wedding, and she's dressed as a man. Now she spoke up and said, "You, king, you're the one who was exiled because of the 11 maidens that disappeared on you. Here are your 11 maidens. Go back to your country and to your kingdom. You, businessman, whom your father had exiled you because of the ship with the merchandise that you lost, here's a ship with merchandise, and because of the fact that you were without it for so long a period of time, I'm giving you a ship with merchandise worth much, much more than what you had in it originally." Because now the ship had the merchandise that she had gotten from those thieves. And then she turned to the son of the king, who was her original groom, and she said to him, "And you, prince, let us go and travel together." And they returned home together. And this is how Rabbi Nizal concludes the story. The commentaries tell us that this story is obviously speaking about the connection between the Jewish people and Hashem, the Jewish people and the Shekhinah, the spirit of Hashem, and how these two are destined to be wedded together, these two are destined to be united. And there's all kinds of incredible obstacles that come up. The forces of Tumah try to do everything in their power to block this, to prevent this union from happening. And yet we see how this daughter of the emperor uses great wisdom. She knows how to deal with each person differently. The murderers, she sees to it that they're killed. The son of the businessman, each person that she has dealings with, she knows she deals correctly with each one. so that she shows in the end that she didn't take anything in any incorrect manner from anyone that she wasn't supposed to. And eventually these two are united, reunited, and get to what they're supposed to get to. This story, when it was told to Rabbi Nosson Zal, Rabbi Nachman's student, shortly before he passed away, when they got to the closing words of the story, where she says to her bridegroom, "And you, royal prince, let us go home," Rabbi Nosson Zal said about himself that, yes, it's time to go home. And these were among the last words that he said before his passing. Again, this story in the book in the book that was printed by the Breslov Research Institute, Rabbi Nachman's Stories, there is commentary on bottom of the story, but most of it is based on Kabbalistic teachings, and it's deep and it's difficult to follow. I hope in the next session that we have, we'll mention briefly some of the insights that I've heard by the elders of Breslov throughout the years, different things that we can learn from specific aspects of this story. At this point, if there are any questions or comments, we'll make the mics available. But again, making it clear that the true explanation of this story is something that's beyond our understanding. Question was asked, could life really be this way? Some aspects of this story are things that each and every one of us go through at different points in life. We encounter different things that are expected and unexpected at times, and we're forced to deal with situations. And a person needs to know, here we see the incredible Hashgacha Proti, how there is divine supervision guiding every move that she makes, guiding everything that happens here, and seeing to it that eventually those that are supposed to be united are united despite all kinds of obstacles and circumstances that would seem to prove otherwise. The question is asked, one of the questions that's asked is that it seems in this story that all the action is being initiated by the daughter of the emperor. Again, according to the commentary, the daughter of the emperor in this case can symbolize the Jewish people. The term Shekhinah, which is used to refer to the spirit of Hashem, and is also used at times to represent the Jewish people, and all the different things that they go through in being able to get reunited with Hashem. Again, I hope in the following session that we'll spend a few minutes mentioning certain highlights and certain points which the commentaries do elucidate in this story that we just discussed.